Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is a special presentation of the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
Welcome to Behind the Bench with Blues broadcaster John Kelly on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
And welcome to another edition of Behind the Bench with the head coach, Craig Berube. I'm John Kelly. The Blues, of course, an off night tonight. Tomorrow night, they continue their four-game homestand against the Colorado Avalanche. And, of course, coach, since our last show, the Blues, two wins and one loss. As you beat Winnipeg 1-0, lose to Vancouver 6-1, and a 4-3 victory over Florida on Tuesday. I know we talk every week about the wins and losses, but how would you evaluate the last week for your hockey team?
Actually, pretty positive. Going into Winnipeg and winning 1-0 is a real good victory there. And penalty kill did a great job that night. Power play got a goal, so the special teams were really good that night and won us the hockey game. Vancouver game, just, I thought we started the game well. Bad luck a little bit with the goal, the one goal, but our team really didn't respond very well. We kind of just didn't quit, but we didn't respond the right way in that game, and it got away from us. But great response against Florida. I thought that we played a real solid 60-minute hockey game, did some really good things, ended up winning the game. You know, even though they came back and tied it, we still went after it and we're aggressive. And that's what we're trying to get to. We want to be where we're an aggressive hockey team all the time, no matter what, and that we're going to put pressure on the other team.
So you don't mean necessarily physical aggression?
No.
Aggressiveness?
No, not at all. Just puck pursuit, just being aggressive in our checking and our puck play.
Coach, is it fair to say it was also an emotional week? We had the fight in practice on Monday between Bortuzzo and Sanford, and then Chad Johnson put on waivers and Jordan Binnington recalled. So some other issues as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously with Chad Johnson putting on waivers, that's tough. Tough for him. We're happy he got picked up, though, by Anaheim. That's good for him. And Binner coming up, he's played really well in the minors. He's done a really good job down there, so he deserved the call. And, the frustrations got high in that practice a little bit, and that happens at times. I don't think it's anything more than that. I think it was blown out of proportion like, you know, a lot of things are. But other than that, I think I've seen it a bunch of times over my career.
Coach, the other news, the Blues, of course, Jordan Kyrou scored his first NHL goal, and then you do send him down to the minors. When a player gets sent down, do you have a chat with him to talk to him about what he needs to do to work on down in the minors to get back? And I guess the obvious question is, why put him down in the minors again?
Yeah, I do talk to the players about things and things they need to do better and all that. And that's like Jordan, like, okay. You know, he didn't play last game, so this kid needs to play hockey, not sit out, not go every other game. So he's done really well, like he's getting better and better, but he's got a ways to go, and he needs to go down there and work on that, on his game.
All right, Coach, let's talk about in depth for a few minutes about last week. You mentioned the Winnipeg game, a 1-0 victory. Parayko gets the only goal on the power play in the second, but of course that comes on the heels of an 8-4 loss prior to that against the Jets. So is it fair to say you went into that game with a burr under your saddle and wanting some revenge?
Oh, definitely. I think that we were embarrassed at home. And, that was brought up, and that stuff's all brought up in the room, and we talk about it because it's important. And we're motivated, motivated to go out there and prove to the Jets that, we're better than that. And guys did a great job. I thought they checked really well, played hard, were physical, were tight on line A, didn't give them much. And, we ended up winning 1-0.
You also had a big hit on line A in the first period, Jordan Nolan. We thought in the broadcast booth, not that people really care what we think necessarily, but we didn't think it was a penalty. But was that a statement in a way to the Jets and Liney that, hey, we're here to play tonight?
Well, yeah, for sure it was. And that was a good clean hit, I thought, too. Also, Bortuzzo getting involved with them off the draw and stuff. Like, that stuff's important. It goes a long way.
Coach, another key to the game was your PK. 6-for-6 against the Jets, and they have one of the best power plays. Of course, Line A, going into that game, had 10 power play goals on the season. So what was the key shutting them down on the PK that night?
Well, making sure you're taking away the seam passes. You know, Wheeler, he's on his forehand there. He likes to make these plays to Scheifele and Line A. So guys did a real good job with their sticks, keeping it on the outside and not allowing that to happen. And when it did, we had some real good blocks by our D, Bortuzzo, one of them, made a couple of nice blocks.
Yeah, so a big win Friday night. Then Sunday, the 6-1 loss against Vancouver. You mentioned you had the good start, and then that crazy goal off the glass. And then the Blues allowed two more in that period. Is that an example of maybe just being a little bit fragile when you see a bad goal go in like that?
Yeah, well, I think that's what happened in that game. Hopefully that we can get past that, because it's important too, because sometimes things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen, and, you know, fluky things at times and bad bounces, and you got to just recover from them. You got to go play. And like I said, we had a real good start. I mean, I think Vancouver iced a puck 3 times in the first 2-3 minutes of the game, and we're all over them. And then they go down, they get that crazy goal, and then bang, they get another quick one, and now we're kind of deflated a little bit. And really, you know, we got to learn to battle through that stuff and fight back and claw back.
Craig Berube, I know last week on the show I talked about the young rookie sensation, Elias Pettersson. He had a goal and 4 assists. Was he better in person than he was on the tapes?
Well, it's the same, but like, you can just see the high skill and you know, the trickiness that he has. He's a real smart player, really smart, and gets in good areas, and obviously has a real good shot too.
Coach, after that disappointing loss, of course, the Blues in their last game, a 4-3 victory against Florida. Your guys are down 1-0 after 2. Did you feel, though, in the locker room that obviously it was still anybody's hockey game, and there was some positive thoughts going to the third period?
Definitely. I thought that our game was good, and we just needed to bounce and get a goal and tie it up. I thought that, you know, I felt good going into the third period. I thought that we were going to make a good push, which we did, and we ended up winning the game.
It seemed like the Schwartz injury and coming back after missing 11 games really energized your team. Why is he so important to the hockey club?
Yeah, he's, like I said, he just brings energy. His skating and puck pursuit, getting on people and playing in tight areas and all that stuff, he's really effective that way. And, you know, he just brings momentum to our hockey team.
I know that we chatted last night, and that weird goal that was called back when Bortuzzo dumped it in off of Tim Peel and it goes in the net, you felt right away it wasn't going to be a goal, even though the fans are celebrating.
Yeah, I knew that. Well, anytime it hits the referee and goes directly in the net, it's not going to count. So I wasn't too excited about the goal.
It was a 1-in-a-million bounce, so you got to admit.
It was 1-in-a-million bounce. And I'm sure Timmy Peel didn't feel too good.
No, right.
But, yeah, so I kind of knew in the back of my mind that it probably wouldn't count, so I wasn't getting too excited about it.
Coach, the other key moment in that game, from my perspective, was after you built a 3-1 lead, you gave up 2 quick goals, you called a timeout. What was the message? And obviously it worked, because Shen scored late in that game for the winner.
Yeah, I just wanted to just take a break and talk to the guys a little bit. That we're fine, we're in good shape here, and that just let's get back going here, let's get going north again, play our game, get in the offensive zone, and get some pucks to the net, and we'll be fine. So that was basically all the message was.
Well, it worked, and the Blues won it 4-3. Coach, this week, the Blues practice days Monday, today, and then you'll have another day on Saturday before wrapping up the homestand. Is there a theme of what you want to get across in practice, or does it just sort of depend on day-to-day?
No, there's a theme. I think that we're working on being a faster hockey team and playing with more pace. So I try to not, you know, do things quick out there, no breaks, and keep going. Puck movement's very important. We got to become a better passing hockey team. And so there's a lot of puck movement and a lot of pace in practice. And then, you know, we're still trying to tighten up with our D zone and our defending. So we always finish with that.
Finally, Coach, the Blues home tomorrow night against Colorado, a club you beat in overtime a few weeks ago, 3-2 in Denver. a great job against the MacKinnon line. They had the one power play goal late. But what was the key that night, and what will the key be tomorrow night against that line and that team?
Yeah, again, they're a highly skilled line with great speed. So you got to try to limit their speed as much as you can, getting in their way, bumps, and, you know, just slowing them down. But they're going to have opportunities where they come with a lot of speed. Our D got to do a good job defending, and we got to do the forwards got to do a good job coming back in a D zone coverage, stopping, looking around, finding late people. That's what they like to come in, turn up, find late people and stuff with their attack. So we did a real good job in Denver with that, and we got to do the same tomorrow.
All right, that's the head coach Craig Berube. I'm John Kelly. When we come back on Behind the Bench, we'll go in depth and go back in time and sort of get the history of head coach and former player Craig Berube, his life story, so to speak, next on Camel X.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench with John Kelly on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
And welcome back to Behind the Bench with the head coach Craig Berube. I'm John Kelly. Tonight's show is sponsored by Boardwalk Hardwood Floors, your factory direct source for hardwood flooring. Since 1997, with showrooms in Manchester, Crestwood, and St. Peter's, or you can visit BoardwalkHardwood.com. Again, with the coach, and I thought in this segment, Coach, we'd talk about sort of your past and let Blues fans get to know you. You're, of course, a native of Alberta, 52 years old, and played 17 years in the league. But I notice you're from Kalahoo, Alberta. I've never heard of Kalahoo. Coach, where is it and how big is it?
Yeah, it's about 50 miles north of Edmonton, Alberta. It's a very small little town. You know, general store, church, hockey rink, and you're out of the town. So it's all farm. I grew up on a farm, and, you know, it's basically, you know, country and farmlands out there.
So obviously you had a great career now into coaching, but did you come from an athletic background in your family, or how did you get into hockey?
Yeah, all my dad and he's got six brothers. You know, they all played hockey. Everybody played hockey and ball. So they were all into sports. And so my dad and my uncle coached us when we were young and got us skating. We had an outdoor rink. That's how it started.
On the farm?
No, just in a town.
Okay.
Yeah. And we skated on, you know, like water, ponds and stuff, you know, out in a farm and stuff like that. But then they built an indoor rink and, you know, we obviously started playing hockey more and more.
What's the coldest day you ever remember as a kid skating outside?
Cold. I mean, obviously it gets cold there. So, yeah, there was times where your feet are froze and everything. It's cold, but yeah, we liked it. I mean, we all liked hockey. My cousins, all of us. There was a lot of kids around there, and we'd get together all the time and just play pond hockey or whatever.
So tell me about your career as a minor hockey player. Were you always one of the best players, or did you late developer, or how did it go?
I think in minor hockey, I was one of the better players, you know, growing up, score goals and things like that. But, you know, as it goes along, and in junior too, like I produced in junior and scored goals and did both, you know, in junior. I was a physical guy, obviously, but I could still score some goals in junior. And again, when you turn pro, and my first year or so in the minors, you don't score as much, so you got to figure a way to stay and find what you're going to do in the NHL.
So you once scored over 30 goals in junior, is that right? Where was that?
I scored 30 goals my last year of junior with a split between Kamloops and Medicine Hat. And I played for Hitch and Kamloops. Hitch traded me and went to Medicine Hat and finished the season there. We ended up playing each other in the finals. We were rated number one in all of Canada, that team in Medicine Hat that year. And they actually went on to win back-to-back Memorial Cups.
So you got beat by Hitch?
Yep, in the finals, and they went to the Memorial Cup that year.
Okay. Do you remind Hitch about that? I'm sure you did, right?
Well, I remind him about the trade all the time because he actually called me, and back then you're only allowed two 20-year-olds on a team. And there was a kid named Greg Eftersevsky who went over to Europe but wanted to come back and play for Hitch, and that was Hitch's guy. So Hitch asked me what I should do, and I said, well, Hitch, the other guy, 20-year-old on the team, is the captain of the team, so you don't want to get rid of him. So you could trade me. It's okay. I don't care. What do you mean? You don't care if I trade you? No, not really. So he traded me.
All right. Good stuff. So you're drafted by the Flyers. How did that all come about?
Signed as a free agent with the Flyers. So when I was in Medicine Hat, started getting approached by teams, and the Flyers were one of those teams, and that's the cheat team I chose to sign with.
And you obviously had a great career. As I said, 17 years, over 1,000 games, close to 200 points, but I think more impressively, over 3,000 penalty minutes. So you said you were a scorer in junior, but I guess in pros you became more of a tough guy. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, like, so when I was down in Hershey my first year, so I went to camp in Philly and did really well, and was sent to the minors, and John Paddock was the coach down there. So, you know, you go down there and, you know, as a young kid, you still think that you're going to play like you played in junior because, you know, you scored, you did this, you did that, but that was tough. It was hard. My skating wasn't great and I couldn't keep up. I couldn't do it. So John, you know, John's a smart guy, and he's one of my mentors, and a big reason I'm where I'm at today, because he pulled me aside and talked to me about things and what I should do, and basically how to become an NHL player. And, you know, starts like I had to change my whole mindset, and that's what I did.
Obviously, when you pick up that many minutes and penalties, a lot of them are fighting majors. Was that part of the game that you really enjoyed, or sort of felt like you had to do that?
I mean, I enjoyed it, but I had to do it. Like, it was my job, and it was my job to, you know, just back then it was part of the game, and it was a big part of the game, and it was a big part of the Flyers. And so I relished that role, to be honest with you, but, you know, I didn't always like it either. It's not always fun, but, you know, in the end, and I would never change it for anything.
I guess the obvious question is, who was the toughest guy you ever fought?
There's a lot of them, but I guess I had a lot of battles with Bob Probert. I think we fought like 8 or 9 times in my career. Yeah,
so. And you're alive to tell about it.
I'm alive. He was tough, but we had good fights, and I think, you know, what made him so tough is, like, you could hit him as hard as you could, and it just didn't really faze him much. Like, he would just keep coming, so it was going to be a battle no matter what. But, you know, to be honest with you, I fought tons of guys, and a lot of them were obviously tough. You know, even like Tony Twist, obviously, here I fought him a couple times in St. Louis, and just different guys, you know, Kelly, Chase, going down the line of guys. They're all tough. That's why they're there. If they weren't, they wouldn't be there.
I thought you were great friends with Chaser.
I am. But we still fought a few times, you know. So we a lot of battles, even from junior up, you know. So like I said, you know, you always ask, who's the toughest guy you fought? Well, if they're all tough, you know, that's why they're there.
Today's game doesn't, of course, you don't see many fights at all, quite honest. I think the Blues have had, you know, off the top of my head, 4 or 5. Is that something that you see in a few years might be totally out of the game? And is that something the game might miss?
Well, yeah, for sure. I think it's trending in that direction. And, you know, do I think the game will miss it? I don't know. I mean, it, you know, people like seeing it a little bit and stuff. But, you know, I think the game is good where it's at. I really do. It's a great game. It's fast. There's contact out there all the time. It's a hard game to play. You know, if you could get people just to come on the bench and watch it from the bench, they would realize how fast it is and how hard it is.
Yeah, very fast. Finally, Coach, before we let you go, how did you get into coaching? I mean, you played a lot of years, and I'm sure played for a lot of coaches, but why did you turn down that road?
Well, I played in Washington with Dale Hunter for about 8 or 9 years together, and we became close friends. And I don't know, we watched hockey a lot, just, and we knew we were both going to coach at some point or wanted to. And, you know, it just came about. I was like, in 2003, I got a call from Paul Holmgren, and I wasn't really doing anything. I was thinking about maybe trying to play another year, but I came out and started helping the Phantoms, and you know, started working with them, and they wanted me to coach. And that's how my coaching career started.
Have you patterned your career after any coach you've had or you admire?
Well, I mean, I think I go back and look at a lot of coaches. You know, when you work with guys, like when you were around Ken Hitchcock, or, you know, Daryl Sutter coached me for a while, and just different guys that I've had, and they've done things differently, or with the, yeah, I kind of take a little bit of everything, you know, and I obviously have my own style, the way I coach and how I do things, but you always grasp certain things that coaches have done.
Good stuff. Coach, thank you for your time. We enjoyed going back and looking at your history, and good luck tomorrow night against the Avalanche.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's the head coach, Craig Berube, another edition of Behind the Bench. I'm John Kelly. Have a great night, everyone.
Hey, Blues fans, Joey Vitale here. Friday night, the Blues host the Colorado Avalanche in a rematch from 2 weeks ago of the great overtime win from the Blues in Colorado. Don't miss any of the action from Enterprise Center. The pregame show is at 6:30 and the faceoff at 7 right here on your home for Blues Hockey, KMOX.
Let's go, Blues!
All right, Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line, hanging out until 8 o'clock. Chris Raby with you. A big thanks to John Kelly, Craig Berube. That was Behind the Bench. Tomorrow night, the Blues and Colorado Avalanche. Thanks to Mike Claiborne as well, who was hanging out in the 6 o'clock hour. We're going to hear from Dan McLaughlin right now with Jim Cavanaugh. Dan is going to be with us tomorrow. Myself, Mark Reardon, Danny Mack, and Jane Duker will be on the Reardon Roundtable tomorrow at Bikes for Tykes. Tell you a little bit more about that coming up. One of my favorite events of the entire year. And Jane will join us in a bit. Is she going to be on from 8 until 10. I don't know who approved that. Have the dump button ready, James O'Sullivan. But Danny Mack has been all over the soccer developments in St. Louis. We turn it over to him right now. A portion of his latest chat from Scoops with DannyMack.com with Jim Cavanaugh.
It was a busy day in New York. It was the owners' meetings in New York, and among the topics, expansion, and certainly a lot of fans here in St. Louis are curious if anything concerning MLS to St. Louis was discussed. Now, our understanding is that none of the ownership in terms of the St. Louis contingent was in New York. Their presentation has been made, but you can understand that fans here in St. Louis are curious if maybe it was discussed at all or if there's some rumors coming out of it. So we go straight to the source, and that's Jim Cavanaugh. Jim, as always, I appreciate your time and what you're trying to do in bringing soccer to St. Louis and what you're doing for the city. So thank you so much.
My pleasure, Dan, and thanks for having me on the show and, you know, talk about this very important, hopefully, campaign that we have going here. So thank you again.
You bet. Anything come out of today and just, you know, your general thoughts of what you heard or, you know, some of the impressions of what you got out of those meetings today in New York?
We have not heard anything yet today. We talk with different individuals from the MLS on a very, very regular basis. And so they understand intimately all the different things that we're doing and are extremely interested in St. Louis. And I think the vibe and just the momentum gets better and better. So we didn't have a specific ask of them going into this meeting, but we do feel very confident that St. Louis was one of the topics of discussion in their board meeting. So we've always looked at it where the ball is in our court. There's a few things that we want to get buttoned up here locally before we put our, what I would consider as our kind of complete application in place with them. And that will be something we'll be working on relatively soon. So overall, I would be surprised if we're not going to hear just very positive things about their view of St. Louis. And based on some of the owners that we've gone out and met, we've met with a number of them. We feel that we've got pretty good support, and the response that we've received from a number of them, they feel good about St. Louis, and I think they'll be very positive on us. So, but at this point, we don't have anything specifically back yet.
I was going to ask you that. Do you have certain owners that say, hey, Jim, hey, Carolyn, we got your back? You know, it's going to be a great rivalry. Maybe it's a regional rivalry with Kansas City or Chicago or somebody else, or it could be somebody on the coast that just says, you know what, guys, you got a great plan in place. You're the perfect fit. We need to be in your town. And we're going to carry the ball a little bit for you at this meeting. Do you get some of that feedback from those owners?
Yes, absolutely. You know, one specific, you know, that I don't think they would mind, or he would mind us quoting. I mean, we've been up to see Cliff Illig and the Kansas City ownership group a few times. They've done an incredible job with their stadium, the experience for the fans. And we've had very good discussions. You know, they're very high on St. Louis. I think they really like the ownership team. They like everything about us, the financial wherewithal, the business acumen, and the passion and experience in the game of soccer. And I think they see that that capability here. And I think what really excites them is to see the ability to create this rivalry between St. Louis and Kansas City, and I think they're very excited about that.
Jim, when you met with the league, did the league say, and you talked about, you know, you want to button up a few things here in St. Louis, did they say, hey, take care of this, take care of that, and then come back and do a final presentation? Or was that you just saying, hey, here's where we're at, we got a lot of things going in the right direction, and when we come back, that'll be our final presentation? You know, kind of tell our fans how that works.
It's pretty much the latter. Dan, as you mentioned it, we have taken what I would consider is a fairly conservative approach in regards to overselling who we are and what we're doing here in St. Louis. And I would describe it as we have under-promised and we're over-delivering what we communicated to the MLS some time ago. And, you know, they've been down this road before with a number of different ownership groups and different cities. And I don't think they see many of them move as quickly as we're moving. So we were, you know, we basically told them, this is the plan that we have, and this is the process we're going to go through. And we think we have a pretty good understanding of what needs to be done, and the impediments that may be in our way to try to move them or remove them if possible. And so I think we have quickly gone from out of sight and out of mind to I believe we're the lead horse here in this race. And you know, our view is that we just want to finalize a few things here in regards to call it our application and just the overall proposal we're putting together. And I think we'll have that put together pretty soon here that we'll go back and present to them and really make it what I believe is going to be very, very difficult for them to say no.
Would Don Garber come to St. Louis, Jim, or would you go to the league offices, or do you anticipate maybe both those things happening?
It's probably a little combination. I definitely would see him and his team making another visit. They've already, you know, there's different members of the team that have been here to see the site location, spend some time with us. And I think they just get more and more positive on St. Louis because they see the progress and the significant progress we're making. And I think the more they get to spend time with the collective ownership group here, the more they like what they see. So I think it would be a little bit of both, Dan. I think, you know, we'll probably make a trip up there, but I definitely think they'll be coming here. And I would think we'd want to do some type of rally just to bring some more visibility and awareness, you know, for our fans. And, you know, I think connecting, creating that vibe for some of the future sponsors.
That is Jim Cavanaugh with Dan McLaughlin, and can't recommend enough that you check out the full conversation and everything at scoopswithdannymac.com, the update on MLS for the Lou. Really excited that Dan is going to be with us tomorrow for the Reardon Roundtable. We'll call it maybe the Raby Roundtable tomorrow. And we're going to be at the lows at Gravois Bluffs, 141 and 44 for Camo X Bikes for Tykes. Go to camox.com/bikes for more information. One of my favorite days of the year. And I'll talk a little bit about that coming up. But we're going to talk with Chris Landry next from LandryFootball.com. Alex Ferrario visits with our football expert before we turn things over to Jane Duker on KMOX.
This is America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Can we go back?
All right, a couple more minutes on the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open line before Jane Duker takes over. She'll join me for a moment here before the top of the hour. But Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com and the Landry Football Report joins us every week. You can hear his full conversation with Alex Ferrario at KMOX.com. But just a taste of what he's looking forward to this weekend in the NFL.
A lot at stake. You're looking at, you know, when you look at the conferences and the shakeup in terms of the playoff implications, man, I mean, you've got home field advantage at stake. You've got, you know, a Miami and Minnesota trying to stay alive, a Dallas trying to hold on against an Indianapolis who's also trying to get into that last playoff spot. Chicago trying to wrap up the North. Green Bay trying to stay alive. Tennessee trying to stay alive. Baltimore trying to stay alive. Seattle looks good for the fifth spot. And then you've got New England, Pittsburgh. I mean, if they don't watch it, they've got New England coming off a loss to Miami. Then they've got New Orleans. They could miss the playoffs altogether. So the Rams trying to hold in for the possibility of home field advantage. And, you know, the Saints trying to hold them off. And then Carolina's kind of played their way out of it. It is most games. This is why they did this. And they get into the last couple of games where you're playing pretty much conference folds in most cases to where it makes every game that much more meaningful. But there are a lot at stake. And, you know, if you look at the teams right now, I try to grade each team and, you know, cumulative effect throughout the year. You're starting to see a little bit with the Bears and the Cowboys, two teams that I don't know if they have enough offenses, Alex, to be a real threat in the playoffs, but I think they're good enough to maybe in a one-game scenario surprise some people. So that's going to be interesting. In the AFC, what's most interesting to me is fascinating to me is the AFC West with the Chiefs, with the Chargers. Now, the Chiefs can obviously, you know, put it away, but if they fall back, I mean, one of those teams is going to get the fifth seed.
Yeah,
is basically what I'm saying. And that is just going to – it doesn't feel right because right now I would look at the Chargers as one of the top three teams right now in the AFC, and they probably are going to end up as a fifth seed.
Well, how about the Bears? And you mentioned them, Chris, but, you know, their offense has been fluky. There's no question with the receivers not being able to, I guess, convert on some of their outstanding offensive plays. But is that defense good enough to move this Bears team through the playoffs, Chris?
Not by itself. They're going to have to play better on offense. And listen, if they put it together, at least in a one-game scenario, if they're able to run the football better and obviously create better down and distance situations and make enough plays in the passing game, with that defense, yes, they can do it. But they're not going to, you know, beat teams, you know, 13-10 or 17-13. They're not going to be able to do that against the Rams on the road, I don't think, and I don't think they're going into New Orleans and doing that. And I think the same thing for Dallas, who beat the Saints recently. So I still think that, at least as it relates to New Orleans, if they have to go on the road, that would be tough. Now, the Rams, a little concerned about how they're playing on offense. They're really out of sync. But, yeah, I think the Bears and the Cowboys, I'll throw a blanket over both of them, yeah, and say, yes, if they can get good offensive productivity in the game, their defense will give them a really good chance. But am I confident in saying that I am confident in their offense to do that, to make a deep run? I have not seen that.
That's Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Cannot recommend enough that you subscribe. Makes for a great holiday gift as well. And you can check out the full conversation. It'll be up shortly at KMOX.com. Jane Duker is up shortly. She's here in the KMOX studio. It's great to see you.
How are you? Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Are you
excited? We're going to hang out tomorrow, too.
I cannot even stand this kind of joy. We are going to be doing great things tomorrow for kids.
It's been so fun the last couple of years.
It really has. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to this. So we're going to have a great time. Everybody needs to come to Gravois Bluffs to see us. Because
so since you know, explain where this is. Because I just keep saying Lowe's, Gravois Bluffs.
The easiest thing to do is
141 and 44?
Yeah, just go up 44 or 141. just south of 44, and you won't miss it. Huge sign, waterfall, says Gravois Bluffs. Then you will see us, like, total awesomeness. Me, you, well, Reardon, sort of, but you and I for sure. And we are going to be having the best time tomorrow. So it's, we're going to do a modified roundtable.
Yeah, you, me, Mark, and Danny Mac. It'll be fun. We just heard a little scoops with Jim Cavanaugh. Dan has been all over this soccer story.
I know, isn't it great? Well, it's such a St. Louis thing. It is. It's great. And so, I'm assuming we're going to be talking a lot about that.
Yeah, and just...
modified.
Just talking about... I think this is a fun time, if also a challenging time to, as you know, talk about the city. And
it is. And this is a positive.
Yeah.
And this
people coming out and hopefully donating for a great cause for us tomorrow, I think it's a perfect
time
to get in.
Come and visit us. Like, we are really fun. I mean, I know that you may be surprised with that. Mark will not dampen Raby and I, but we will be there. And it is always fun. Are we going to have decent weather? Not that it would deter us.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Because last year, remember, it was
cold.
Oh, I mean, like, I didn't feel my fingers for 3 days after. But I had the best time and wouldn't have traded 1 minute.
Well, we'll be there tomorrow, starting at 2. Come out and see us. And Jane's coming up from 8 until 10. Have fun.
All right. I can't wait till tomorrow.
A big thanks to Ben Boyd, our executive producer. All of our guests tonight, Mike Claiborne, joined us behind the bench, and Chris Landry with Alex Ferrario. Thanks to James O'Sullivan. I'm Chris Raby. I'll talk to you Blues pregame tomorrow at 6:30. Until then, be nice to each other. And as always, peace.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.